Podcast.
Welcome to the Mouth Podcasts. These episodes are available at www.themouthjournal.com, where themes of culture are heard and analyzed. I'm Luis Cronopio, and here with me is Juanita Akelo. She's my colleague of Master in Culture and Environment in Africa here at the University of Cologne. She's a journalist and documentarist, preparing a 10 episodes documentary about the diversity of cultural groups in Uganda. And today we are going to talk about education in Uganda. Welcome, Juanita.
Thank you.
For accepting the invitation to this interview.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Tell me, how close is the Ugandan system with the British one?
Oh, it's very similar. So Uganda is a country found in the eastern part of Africa and were colonized by the British. And up to now, we still have great similarities in the method of education system. For example, we learn about other parts of the world. We learn about Europe, we learn about Asia and US. And very limited information about Africa, actually, in our own country. And the education type is very authoritative. So in the basis that the teacher knows everything and the students are stupid and dumb. So basically, if I remember when I was in school, I would get punished for challenging a teacher. He said a statement and I challenged it, I'll get punished for it because it was the ideology of top down. The teacher knows everything. And I think also this comes from a colonial mindset where the colonialists, when they were teaching Africans, they didn't accept for any challenging questions to be asked. So you just take it the way it is. And much as it's changing, I must say, compared to when my younger brothers and sisters, how they teach them has really changed. It's still a bit similar. That's very authoritarian. And yeah, more focusing on everything else apart from the cultures that that influence our realities.
In 97, the government of Museveni started the program of free education, focused on primary education. And some critics were saying that that would undermine quality. Can you tell something about this balance of training of teachers, how they become more aware of this top-down situation that is not bettering the education of the students?
Yeah, so this education is called the Universal Primary Education, and I was actually, my last 2 years in primary, I went to a school that was partly universal primary education using this system. And when it began, I thought it was really a very brilliant concept, actually providing free education, giving every child the opportunity to study, because before it was only those who could afford. And with the universal primary education, actually the girl child, so all the girls, the females, were given a priority. Because culturally speaking, before, only boys, not even culturally speaking, but before, only boys were looked at as the only people supposed to go to school, while girls were supposed to stay home, get married, take care of the kitchen, you know, this very traditional aspect or perspective of looking at a woman or a girl. And so if it was education, girls were denied education in that sense. If there was a boy in the family, the girl would be told to go home and the boy would be told to go to school. But with the universal primary education, they actually made it in such a way, not only for education to all, but girls were also prioritized when receiving students. In the beginning, yeah, it was a very brilliant concept. However, I think it was poorly managed because so many kids came in. You would have a class, 10 square feet and you have about 50 kids in there and really packed. And with the system, you can't fail how it's created. So even if a child is struggling, he's sent to the next class at the end of the year, the academic year, he's sent to the next class, irrespective of whether he passed or not. And so the quality exactly of the education lowered, much as everyone had the opportunity, so to say, to go to school, but the conditions were really low, and so was the education system. And in turn, to the question about the teachers, they go to teachers' colleges, and I have a very limited idea. I only have the information based on my aunties, because they went to this search of teachers' colleges, and they're taught not only the subject but also how to teach. And I think this mindset of you're the knowledge of everything is really prevalent, because when they come to school to teach, not all teachers though, but most of my teachers, I would say only three were open-minded. The rest were really closed-minded, and they would not accept a challenge, like I said before. And in case they don't know an answer, it would be more shameful for them to say they don't know, instead of admitting, you know, that they don't know the answer, instead of letting a student know or they don't know. So they would prefer to just stay arrogant in this sense. But teaching has changed, and this is not the way we should be going. We should allow dialogue. We should allow, because we can learn from each other. And our cultures actually showed this, our different cultures. In the cultural perspectives, some of them, children were not allowed to talk. But in some opportunities, we knew we can learn from each other, so we'd share. You know, an example from Acholi people, they have the concept of the Wang O, which is based sitting around the fire and having informal education. So we would, this is where we learned our stories about culture, we learned about the folk tales, and if we had questions, we'd ask, but also people with questions would ask, and a young person would respond based on their experience.
Do you think it's possible to decolonize the education structure in Uganda and to have more examples like this that you say from the Acholi?
Yes, it's not just even Acholi. A lot of tribes have such examples, but it's very possible to decolonize. It's only the matter of, you know, the mindset of the Ministry of Education, for example, that, and changing it, because I think they have this system where they think changing the structure is going to take so much, because that would mean a lot of work from their side, which is basically the job. Yeah. You're the Ministry of Education, you have to work on this. You can't be in a country, an African country like Uganda, and only specialize on papers written in the 80s and the 90s. That doesn't suit our reality today. And also, we have to learn about our various cultures, because this is what makes us who we are. I'm an Acholi, and if I didn't learn from my grandparents and from my aunties and uncles and my friends too, I would never have learned it, because it's not taught in school, you know. Or if I'm in Uganda, actually, a lot of schools are in the central. So you in primary, you learn some folktales about Buganda, the Buganda cultures, but not really. It's not connected. You
like
know?
The Buganda as a way to give this national identity, you think?
Not national identity, but more like to have a respect and appreciation for the culture itself, the where it's coming from. Because it explains why they do certain things the way they do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's another critique in the system, in the education system, which is related with the employability, no? That is very difficult for a lot of students that go further, primary and secondary, and then university some, that they cannot have jobs because the system, the education system is very theoretical, that people lack specific skills of communication, of critical thinking, political thinking. Is, in your experience, are were these kind of skills taught taught in your
experience? Very theoretical, honestly speaking. If most of the schools, especially in the villages and the small towns, don't have access to proper laboratory equipment or let's say computers. So when you're learning, you learn the theoretical version. And what happens when then you come to, let's say, the capital city, and you have to work with a computer and you only have theoretical knowledge. And maybe you saw a computer once and you maybe just touched it, but not like constant regular practice with it. Mm. Then you will be lost, you know. And so, yeah, most of what we studied was very theoretical. And it was in small instances that you'd have a practical side. For example, in agriculture, we had in the school I went to, we had lots of practical experiences because then we have so many gardens. And Uganda is mostly an agricultural country, so it's not industrialized, mostly industrialized. It's only mostly agriculture, though there are elements of industrialization there. So it would be easy then what we're learning in class, not everything, but some practices would go to demonstration farms and look at it. So in some senses, that was practical, but mostly theoretical.
Where do you come from in Uganda?
Gulu. It's in northern Uganda, yes.
And you attended 7 years primary school?
No, not in Gulu. I studied in Bale, which is the eastern part of Uganda, because my mom was working there. And then we moved to Kampala in 2002. So that's where I completed my primary school, yes. So the last 2 years. But it's 7 years of primary, and before you have the pre-primary, so baby class, middle class, upper class.
And what was your experience? How did you felt with the teacher? Did you have a good experience with the teacher?
In my first primary school, yeah. It was a different system and it was very open-minded, my first primary school. So it was a good relationship with the teachers, you know, and it wasn't too strict, so to say. But then when I joined for my last two primary years and my secondary school especially, it was very strict, you know. We almost got punished once every 2 days for different things, you know, and sometimes some didn't make sense. You get punished for failing, you get punished for not answering a question, you get punished for answering a question wrongly. So what happens is the mindset of this child starts getting limited, and they get scared to ask, to question what's happening. And it not only stops in class, it transfers even out of school. So we have students who graduate, and when you ask them challenging questions or give them opportunity to criticize, it's hard. Because I think also of the trauma of having to go through school, if you criticize anything, you got punished. And this is literally having a teacher beat you with a stick 3, 4, 6, 10 times. And you can't properly study uh-huh. in such an environment. I mean, we survived, we came out of it. We came out of it, but it really stiffens the joy of learning.
Yeah. I have a citation that Buber in 2003 says that all education must have a focus on inclusion in the difficult but achievable goal of building community. The goal of education is communion, which, as opposed to coercion and humiliation, as you say, is part of a process of liberation. And at the base of this are fight for equality against all types of discrimination, yes. Exclusion. So you were in eastern part and then in Kampala.
Yeah.
And I want to go now more to the Joseph Kony,
mm-hmm.
Guerrilla.
Guerrilla.
So to say. And how if you had information, no? Because it was a lot in Gulu, in this Gulu region. How did it impact the war in this part of Uganda?
Very negatively, honestly speaking. The war, the Joseph Kony with the Lord Resistance Army, the LRA rebels, caused so much havoc and destruction, not only physically, but to the people themselves. They were not even animals could do such a thing, what they did, and the scars are still visible. And what hurts the most is he hasn't yet been caught, you know? So this is like a recurring pain for us. And it really affected education, not just education, but also the cultural setup of the Acholi people. And also the northerners were affected by this. In the sense that the rebels used to raid the schools. And we have boarding school system in Uganda. We have day and boarding. When some kids are in boarding, some kids are in day. So in the boarding school, you live in dormitories. And some of these dormitories were ambushed by the Lord Resistance Army. And they took the kids from these girls and boys. I mean, you have the story of the Boke girls taken to become wives, to make more children, to produce more kids for the rebels. And then the boys were taken to join the rebels. And in the villages, they made them commit atrocious acts, really very despicable, atrocious acts. I mean, at the very least, I could say they would tell if they found you, they would tell you to kill your own mother. Because they wanted to create this robotic breed of fighters who, if I kill my own mother, then I can kill anyone else. This kind of mentality. And up to now, it's really hard, especially for the returnees, to go back into school because they're having this post-traumatic, you know, disorder and depression. And it's not, again, it's not really being worked on very well. We don't have very good facilities of therapy and counseling and dealing with this post-traumatic stress. It's there, but it's not adequate, you know. Mm. But on the other side, much as it was such a horrible experience, and yeah, again, it affected the culture so much because so many people were forced into the town. Every day they had to walk, coming to the town to sleep in the evening and then going back in the morning, back to the villages. So labor was an issue. The cultural identity became an issue. However, in that sense as well, it brought out a beautiful aspect of the Acholi culture, which is the justice system of forgiveness, rehabilitation into the society, especially for the returnees soldiers or the captured kids when they came back, so that they're not tried and put into prison for what they did, because the way they were trained was despicable, honestly, but more like rehabilitating them back into the society. And we had this Matu Oput, a traditional ritual of reconciliation. So yeah,
Perhaps it's difficult, but I will ask you. Now you are the minister, you are the responsible of Ministry of Education in Uganda. Mm-hmm. No, I officially indict you.
Declare me. The minister. Got it.
So what is your main program? What are your main lines of...
The first thing, honestly, I would start with is the re-education of all the teachers and anyone in a teaching position. Because the students spend the biggest time of their lives with the teachers. We spend 9 months in boarding school and 3 months at home. So that means the teacher is like a second parent, or even the main parent in this sense, because we spend more time with them. And so re-educating them in a sense of how they teach, the methods of teaching, shouldn't be too authoritative, should allow for inclusiveness, should limit coerciveness, should limit this forceful way of teaching, you know. And also, in that sense, more money would have to be invested in education, honest education and health, instead of the military, in my opinion. Education and health would really need a lot of investment, because then we'd have, if changing the syllabus is not something that you do overnight, that means we have to get new information and texts and articles that are updated, that are up to date with this. We'll have to also include, if I was Minister of Education, include the aspect of cultural education, you know. So not only that you learn about Europe and Asia and North America, but you also learn about your own country and how rich and diverse the cultures in this country are. Much as they're different, they're similar too. Like you have the Acholi, the Langi, the Baganda, the Banyoro, the Baguera, Bagisu, Basoga, Batoro. So many cultures, more than 40, very rich, very different, but very similar. And not just in Uganda, but very similar to also other tribes and cultures, mostly cultures in other countries. Like I lived in Kenya, Tanzania, Ghana as well, Ivory Coast and Benin, and some of the cultures are very similar. In Ethiopia too, when I was in the villages interacting with some people, I'd be like, oh my God, we do this exact same thing. So we're different, but not really that different. We are very similar. And we don't know this because we don't study about this, or we don't learn it from school, or you know, if you have grandparents to tell you, then you're lucky. But if you don't have them, either you learn from your fellow peers or
And something similar with the Germany system that you are experiencing.
We eat a lot of meat. The meat aspect, but I mean, most of the cultures are very communal in Uganda, especially in African cultures. We live as a community, so there's an aspect of communal living, while I think in Germany it's very individualistic, according to my experience, but it's very individualistic. For example, if I'm in a tram and I sit next to someone and I say hello in Germany, I cannot ask them, where do you live? How many kids do you have? This would be regarded very personal questions. How dare you? You know, you don't even know me. But in African countries, not all of them are the ones I've been to. Some of them I mentioned. I would enter into whether it's a trotro in Ghana or a taxi in Uganda, matatu in Kenya. You can sit next to someone and start a discussion. How are you? I'm fine. Oh, then they'll notice your accent is different. Where are you from? I'm from Uganda. Oh, Uganda. Then you talk. But by the end of the journey, you know the person's family, you know his wife, you know the names of the kids, where they study, where they live. Some of them tell you how much they make. Because we're that kind of people, very communal, very open as well. And this is how basically we grew up.
So like here, I think also here in Germany or in Portugal that I have more experience. Students are more are taught to repeat facts instead of being taught to think creatively. Do you know some examples that are being done in this area in Uganda?
To repeat facts?
No, to repeat facts like as a way. Of this, the teacher as the king.
The knowledge. No, we did it. We used to call it cram work.
What is it? Cram work?
Cram work. So we cram literally exactly the way it was written. It's kind of like a play, honestly. You cram each line, each word, and if you ask this question, you write exactly that statement that you read. For example, in the book, this facts here, write it exactly how it's written. And then you'll get points. But if I would to go another way and criticize it, I would fail. Because then then this is really bad, because it shows there's only one line of thinking. And that's dangerous, because that's what leads to a lot of crazy people thinking that, you know, their ideas are the best. And yeah, we know how that story goes. Yeah, so it creates this arrogant approach of thinking you own all the facts, and that fact is right, but it abuses the other perspective, that people have different perspectives and different approaches and ways of looking at things. That's why you have critics, and then you have those who praise you as well, you know.
So you start primary school, and then some people do secondary, and then do university. The university is a big majority. Around 70% are private universities. How much are the costs? How can a poor person afford it?
No, they can't. Honestly, the universities are expensive, and I think the only way a poor person can study is through scholarship.
And they are limited.
Very limited. It's funny because the people who get the scholarships from good families, you could say enter, and also it's not just that, but also could be because some the government scholarships is based on the best performers. Now, remember if we backtrack what we talked about earlier, the schools in the villages and small towns don't have access to good education systems. So obviously the ones in the cities are going to lead in education because they do practical work. They have properly equipped laboratories. They, you know, they have more attention of the teachers and of proper libraries, reading materials. How can someone from this school compete with a child who studies under a tree, who has never seen a laptop, a computer, who doesn't know, who just knows the theory of it? It's really unfair. And sometimes we have the district level scholarship scheme too, where the district also gets I think this was introduced to take care of this kind of problem. But again, it's still in a district, which is like a town, let's say, you have the town side and the village side, and still you have these discrepancies. And so, yeah, it's really hard to compete. And so in the end, the people who get the scholarship sometimes are from well-to-do families that could have afforded it. And then those who are from poor families, they can't get in.
In these documentaries that you are editing now, mm-hmm. I understood. You have some specificity of the educational system want to tell us?
It's not very specific on the education system, but it was more that I was showing the different aspects of the cultures, especially before Westernization influenced them. For example, how were the traditional ceremonies conducted? When a child was born, the naming ceremony, the marriage, the burial, how were these treated? The idea of superstitions, the traditional stories, the aspects, the customs and norms, respect, elders, how were these treated? The traditional way of education, how, because there were no schools before the coming of the colonialists, but how were we educated by then? And that's where I found, oh, actually the cultural way of education prepared us for life. And because you would know, if you were 15, for example, you would know already how to farm, how to, you know, build a house. We have these huts in the villages, the mud houses, how to build that. You'd have life skills that if you had the form education system, you'd have something to fall back on, you know, just in case, let's say you finish university, don't have a job yet. It taught you to think out of the box. So if I don't have a job now, what can I do? What skills do I have? In the meantime, how can I make money? You know, how can I take care of myself? How can I take care of my family? You'd have to think this way. But unfortunately today, I remember personally going through school, a lot of times I had my teachers telling me, you have to study so you can go to university, so you can get a job in the office and make money. That's it. So that's the goal, to have an office job. But again, remember I said, Uganda is mostly an agricultural country. So if you really want to have a job, it's not in the office, you know, because so many people are fighting for those jobs there. And so it has to be the other way. But we don't think the other way. Sometimes I hear some few colleagues saying, oh, I can't do farm work. Oh, my God, I have a bachelor's. I can't be a farmer. You know, this mentality, it's really dangerous because it's not a despised job. No, it's where the money is at, you know. And so, yeah, my documentary is basically giving information about the different cultures in Uganda, not only for Ugandans, but also for anyone who comes in contact with Uganda. And also, they will see different similarities, especially other Africans when they watch it, they'll see so many similarities of the aspects of culture to show we're not so different. You know, we're one people, but just living in different places.
Okay, thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you very much too.